Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now then, Keith Wood, even you will accept a happy Christmas today, surely.
100%. Happy Christmas, everybody.
Happy Christmas, everybody.
Happy, excited. I just don't like it early on in the month. I'm fully in Christmas swing at the moment.
Good. What does Christmas swing entail? What's the great tradition over the next day or two?
It's always family dinner, and unfortunately for everybody, I do the cooking. So it's I love it. It's just having family around. So Nicola's family are over from the UK, and yeah, it's great. Kids love it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's a good time. You do the cooking. I must admit, I'm a touch surprised to hear that.
There you go. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thunk it, as they say? Who'd have thunk it?
So will rugby be part of the story then? Because obviously on the 28th, the Saturday, it's Munster-Leinster. We have Ulster-Connacht on the Friday. The Interpros around Christmas are a big part of the tradition increasingly. Will you be there on the Saturday?
Absolutely. Okay. I'm looking forward to it, I must say. Again, a big family event. There's a load of us going. I think it's a fantastic occasion. I know people get a little bit upset about the idea that maybe not all the frontline players are playing, but with the year that they've had and are going to have to come, these guys need a break at some stage. And I've kind of got used to the idea of watching some of the young Turks coming through, and you can see Jordan Larmour announced himself onto the Leinster stage a couple of years ago. Yeah. In Thomond Park. Yeah, I like it. And I like the games at the weekend as well. I mean, they weren't as fluid as you'd expect, but you are getting to see some of the guys that will be vying for places over the next year or 2 years.
Yes. People miss them, by the way, with the hustle and the bustle of the season. Connacht 14, Munster 19 at the Sports Ground on Saturday, and then Leinster 54, Ulster 42 in kind of a mad, disjointed second half at the RDS, where Ulster, by the way, had four debutants. They made 14 changes from the side which beat Harlequins. They had four debutants, including, and it caught our eye here, Jack Regan, son of Dahi Regan, who's a regular pundit on the show. Jack is 22, played at lock, 6'6", so well done. I'm sure Dahi was very proud. In fact, I saw a picture on Twitter. He was very proud, so that was one small point that we were all happy to see here. I am in the, a bit like you, I'm in the getting used to stage, and I've come to accept that this is the way the Interpros are going to be, especially around Christmas. Of course, blood and thunder and frontline players would be preferable, but it's really hard to make the argument when player welfare is such an issue. I mean, I can't really in good faith be cribbing in 2 weeks' time about not looking after players. You have to accept the pain somewhere.
No, and I think if you look back 5 or 6 years ago, there were so many gimmies in the Pro 14 that those things never happened, and they had a higher sense of importance with it because you could rest at different times. You can't really rest now. And but also, do you know what it does? And it means, you know, we're joking about a bit of Christmas cheer at the start. You know, everybody gets involved with the idea of Christmas. All the fans come out, all the people that have been away or living away and come home for Christmas, they all get a chance to kind of meet up again. And it's become a social occasion. And it is important, of course they are, but, you know, there seems to be a bigger view taken on it. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it for different reasons. You don't kind of have as much tension when you're going to watch a game, a Munster-Leinster game, if you're saying, well, you know what, Leinster have a huge strength and depth, and Munster are trying to blood new players and come along, and maybe we get Joey Carberry back, and we can just be excited for that fact. It isn't a do or die game, which kind of offends some of the traditionalists, but look, anyway, we have to get us, to get the players rested at different times of the year. I watched over the last couple of weeks now, I watched some of the rugby over in the UK, and their blooding of players and some of the teams that are coming in doesn't seem to be as effective as, well, nobody's as effective as Leinster, but even Munster at the weekend. I thought that was a great result for Munster at the weekend with a lot of young guys playing.
Mm. Well, let's start with Munster then. So, as we said, it was 19 points to 14 in the end. And, I mean, Connacht came away feeling a bit upset with how they played. Andy Friend said, we can't play like that and expect to get a result. Just too many errors. They reckon they gifted Munster about 10 points here, is what Andy Friend said afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. I actually think Connacht have been unusual for the last few weeks. They got away with it with the two tries in the last 5 minutes against Gloucester. And I felt they did get away with it. They didn't play particularly well. And they didn't play particularly well a few days ago either. And you know, I thought Munster were conservative. And they did, I think they enacted a particular style of play that was just incredibly effective. They didn't give up many opportunities. So they were never behind in the whole game. I thought they played pretty well. I thought with the team that Connacht had picked, it was Connacht's to win all day long, and they didn't. So Munster would go away from that thrilled to bits.
Yeah, because, I mean, there weren't many big names in that Munster team. Chris Farrell was there looking through it. JJ Hanrahan continued his starting berth. We had Dave Kilcoyne. We had Chris Clude back. We had CJ Stander. Billy Holland was there, Jean Klein. But plenty of names that people mightn't recognise as well, and that's kind of part of the story. Just a quick word on Jack Carty, because he's had a strange couple of weeks going from starting at a World Cup for his country to now outside of this 45-man stock take, and even Andy Friend having to drop him in the last couple of weeks and basically publicly saying he's not where he was. So he scored a try and seemed to play well. Andy Friend said that was the Jack Carty of last year that we saw when he came on. It does take players time to find their mojo and find their form. I mean, that's a big fill-up for them and a big fill-up for him, because I don't know if you had any bouts of poor form or lack of confidence. I don't know exactly what's gone on with Jack Carty, or a World Cup hangover of sorts, but he was in something. He was in the doldrums.
Yeah, well, I thought from where he was even last year to get him to play for Ireland was a very big step. And during the World Cup, when the pressure came on, he seemed to drift further back, because he had a huge amount of high-class games under his belt to understand how to deal with that pressure. And you get exposed in international rugby. It's quite interesting watching some fans and some commentators or pundits react to young guys that come through. It's a huge step up, like absolutely colossal in terms of pressure. And I thought he was a really good player. I liked him. But I felt that he kind of got up to that top very, very quickly on the back of not a huge number of big performances. And I think he was found out a little. And that's fine, because most people get found out and they know that they have to work harder, push harder, do other things, learn new skills. That's part and parcel of it. But it's very hard when you're found out on the dream that every child would have that plays rugby is playing in a World Cup, you know. And so I'd say that took a bit of a shock for him to get used to it. Other guys would have played more, would understand that actually losing is part of rugby as well. But he went, almost flew a little bit close to the sun. But I think he'll come back and play very well. And it is the reaction to how you do it afterwards. Mm. And whether, you know, injuries and you get a chance. Who's the guy that's taken his place?
Connor Fitzgerald
has actually, apart from the fact he looks 12 years of age, has played with a great level of confidence. And even he made a few mistakes again in the game the other day, because he just hasn't played a huge number of those big games. But that's the nature of it. It's how Jack Carty decides to stand up to losing a little bit of confidence or a bit of his mojo, whatever it was. It's to try and see what that's like over the next few months.
And you don't want to give a sucker an even break either, because, OK, a bad couple of weeks has its own momentum. But then if that becomes a couple of months and suddenly a season goes by, or a season and a half, and Connacht have to make a tricky decision. You know, not everyone bounces back. We were just talking in the previous segment with Pat Nevin about David De Gea, brilliant goalkeeper who is now, I don't know, is it scar tissue or what's going on, but he is just prone to errors he would never have made previously. And actually with him, something's kind of broken. You know, and you don't want to let that kind of situation linger and run into months and months. If you're Carty, it's really important to interrupt it as early as possible, because otherwise, I presume, I mean, you've seen lots of players down the years and played with them, a certain scar tissue builds up and maybe turns into a certain fragility.
Yeah, and that can happen. But you have to learn from it. You have to say, why have I lost my confidence? What am I trying to do here that is making this worse? What's exacerbating it? I know it for myself. I had a lot of trouble with my shoulders, and you'd go line out throwing and my line outs would go wobbly and we'd start losing a few of them, and you're there, oh, for God's sake. You start counting in percentages. So I've lost the first one. I'm 100% lost. I'm zero now. I'm at zero. So I get the next one. I'm still only at 50%. And you get into this negative thought, and you're trying to get as many as you possibly can to rack the numbers up. Then you lose another one and you start worrying about stats than actually playing the game. And he's too good a footballer to have to worry about things like that. I don't doubt that he'll get back. Yeah. But you do want to nip it in the bud as soon as you can.
Yeah. Look no further than, what, O'Gara, way back when in that European Cup final. I think he phoned you over the summer, didn't he, and said, well, I need to do something here. And you said, bloody right you do.
Yeah, well, you have to recognise it. And it doesn't matter whether anybody else knows it. And that's one point we'd always talk about. You need, if you can have somebody that you can trust who will be honest to you but not gut you, you know, so that we'll understand that, yes, actually, I've gone through this before, or I know players that have gone through the exact same thing. But you have to put your hand up, recognise that you're making a mistake or you're practising a flaw or something's going on, and you need to get your head around it. Admit it to yourself. And if you can admit it to a mentor or somebody who gives you an ear to your problems, that's brilliant. It's actually a stronger position to be. Raj talked about that earlier on this year, I think, in terms of, it was an interesting conversation. He was in a bit of a panic.
Yeah.
And the truth is, when you get up to the playing for your country really quickly, you haven't gone through some of the steps. You haven't seen some of the hiccups that happen. You haven't seen some of the obstacles or pitfalls. And you're not prepared for it because you don't know. You've got a chance. Like we talked about Jacob Stockdale, that he was trying to learn how to play rugby on the international scene. And the fact that he couldn't seem to miss a try meant it was impossible not to pick him. Yeah. But he's still very, very raw. And I actually think he's come back pretty well from it too, because he had a dip during the year with the pressure, with the idea of the second season. And it's funny because the only people who say the second season syndrome doesn't exist are the guys that are 21, 22, because they don't know, you know, and we've seen it forever. It isn't that they don't play well. It's that other people have them factored into their plans. So they're closed down. They don't get the space anymore because they were pretty much ignored at the very start.
Mm. One last point on Munster. So Joe Carberry possibly, TBC, possibly will play against Leinster, or he'll get some game time rather against Leinster on Saturday. JJ Hanrahan, so I mean, if he's sitting down and he's saying to you, well, have I done enough here to fend off Joey Carberry in the medium to long term? Where is Hanrahan in his progression? Because we know what a talent he certainly was.
I'm thrilled for JJ Hanrahan because he's had a consistent amount of game time. He's also stopped trying to force the game. So when he was getting very little game time, he'd come on, he had to do something. That's a very difficult place to be. I think he's playing very well. It's whether he can play very well on the very big games. And you'll never know it until he starts to play it. But now he's got a body of, like, we know Joey Carberry can. So now JJ has a body of work underneath him. I think it actually puts Munster into a much stronger position than they were, especially with Tyler injured. You know, so for me, I would still say Joey Carberry is the more accomplished 10. Mm. But he's a very different type of 10. But JJ is now a proper alternative. And I don't think he had been for the last couple of years.
Okay. Leinster then against Ulster. Well, I mean, 54 points to 42. So kind of an odd game in many ways. As I said, Ulster had made 14 changes from their European match against Harlequins the weekend before. They had four debutants. And to quote Dan McFarland, he said, Leinster rather tortured us in the first half when they had the ball. They were exceptional. Leo Cullen, as you can imagine, was less effusive about Leinster's performance. But that was Dan McFarland's take on Leinster in the first half.
Yeah, but sure, they were breathtaking, you know. And again, going back to the very start of the conversation, when you see the team that Leinster are able to put out of kids, can't win anything with kids, isn't that it?
Yeah.
Like, some of these guys are fantastic. And look, Scott Penny, Caelan Doris, Max Deegan, you know, that's a back row to drool over, you know. And and there's so many other guys that they can have and play. And it's I think they're very exciting to watch, and very interesting to see Harry Byrne get a spin as well. And I haven't seen a huge amount of him, and he's quite comfortable with the ball. I think he is maybe slightly more natural 10 than his brother, which is kind of interesting, you know. And I mean, his brother's a very, very calm and sure pair of hands. but there's maybe a little different spark in there. So you get excited by that too.
Right. And without heaping pressure on Harry Byrne, when you that natural flair you're seeing, are you talking about running with the ball and passing, or is something in particular?
Running and passing, but he's looking to attack a little bit more for me. And there's just a little bit more of that. You'd often hear me say it about Joey Carberry, seeing it early, playing it late. I like that.
Yeah. And to help the kids along, they had the likes of Rob Kearney, Fergus McFadden, Robbie Henshaw, Sean Cronin was back, Gibson Park, Scott Fardy, all just sprinkled in there. And it just makes it so much easier for the kids coming through as well, rather than, you know, over to you, 14 kids and one experienced player.
Well, that's it. You know, sometimes you see in internationals in the autumn, you'll have a game against Canada and there'll be 14 changes. I never think that's fair. No. I never think it's fair on the players. Yes, they're playing for Ireland and that's a great thing, but you want to actually play with some of the guys that are the leading lights in the game. So I actually think the provinces have managed their players very well over the last couple of weeks.
Mm. So as 2019 draws to a close, and we'll keep an eye on those games, Munster-Leinster's on the Saturday, that's the 28th, and Ulster host Connacht on the 27th. What's your strongest rugby memory of 2019 then, Keith? There's a question.
Strongest memory, it's funny, I was chatting to my eldest fella, we were just talking about rugby, and we're struggling to get really good Irish ones in the last 12 months. We haven't had a year, we haven't had a great year because we're used to success now, which, look, I love that fact. I think that is a change in itself. For me, the World Cup in Japan. I was in Tokyo for 2 weeks for the semis and the final, and the English All Black game was truly phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the standards, the level of aggression, the level of skill, the pace that game was played at was remarkable. And then the following week, watching a totally different type team, a South African team who were just huge, and they used their power and strength and weight incredibly well for pretty much 60 minutes. And then the fast guys on the outside blitz for the tries. I thought that was pretty phenomenal. But for the winner for me was Tokyo. I couldn't get over how cracking a city it was, how phenomenal it was to be in a place where everybody was so friendly. And so for me, I'll hold that one down as my memory of the year.
Well, that's a good one. We are talking with Keith Wood. Our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Did any part of your romantic heart sink as you watched this brilliant England team and what they had done to New Zealand ultimately lose a World Cup final because they were just being mauled at the scrum and it was beef rather than flair beating them?
No, it's funny. No is the answer, because the reason, the joy for me of rugby and of an old traditionalist is that it is a game for all shapes and sizes. Now, not necessarily giants, right? And there was an element of that. But the fact of watching Cheslin Colby score, stepping, you know, sidestepping inside in a phone box, like there's a place for the smallest guy as well. And South Africa got a great blend. They didn't have that. 2 years ago, they were a shambles. So where they've gone in that period of time is brilliant. I'm afraid the romantic side of me goes when you see a Khaleesi and you hear his backstory and you see the poise and dignity with which he speaks immediately after the game. When you're, I spent 2 or 3 days with John Schmidt, the captain who won in 2007, and he just said, Woody, our World Cup win in 2007 or Francois in 95 said they were all important, but they absolutely pale in comparison to what this can actually do for the country. And so for that, that's where the romantic of me comes out on it. But I mean, I loved it. I loved the World Cup. I obviously didn't love it from an Irish perspective, but I loved watching Japan play, and I loved watching the onus that they were able to give to it. You know, they were together for 200 days to that World Cup because it was such a big thing for the country, and it became a huge thing for the country.
One kind of curious one with the benefit of hindsight, and I've talked to a couple of people about this and I've had different answers, and I've had some as early as Cardiff in the Six Nations, and the question being, when did you think to yourself, this isn't going to work out for Ireland, this isn't going to happen?
Yeah, I try not to get too retrospective.
It's the end of the year, so I'm going to make you.
Yeah, after it. I was shocked by the game in the Aviva. I was really looking forward to Ireland having had a really good year. I wanted to see how we would deal with that mantle. And what actually happened to us on that first day was we got shell-shocked by England. They went to a pure power game and they bullied us off the field. And so for me, that was the shock. And where I was getting increasingly upset was how much that knocked us back. Like, we were incredibly confident 6 weeks before that game, and suddenly we were shocked. But not only that, we didn't then change our game. So we were in a position where if people played against us in that fashion, we were going to be under pressure again. And that was surprising. Mm. So I found that a bit upsetting. When we got to the summer, the warm-up games, I knew, and we were talking about it, and I absolutely wasn't making excuses at it, but I didn't expect us to win the game. And there was no reason for us to win that game. We were at a different point in the cycle. We had had a hard training week, weeks coming up to it. We hadn't played any rugby, so I didn't expect us to win the game. But I fully expected us to meet their power challenge, even if it was only for 15 or 20 minutes, and we didn't. Mm. And that's the time I felt, okay, I'm really uncomfortable about this. I'm really, when people were saying, well, Joe has got something else in the bag, and I never believed that, and you never really believe those things. You might have an odd move or whatever, but that's about it. But for me, we were then under huge pressure.
Mm, yeah, plenty of warning signs. Last question with the view to 2020. Six Nations become suddenly very interesting. I mean, we're talking about various points in the cycle. Jeez, how many new coaches and so much unpredictability about the Six Nations coming up. And then, you know, there's a sense Leinster really are in pole position in Europe. Are they the big two things to mark a card for 2020?
Look, absolutely. Leinster they're a joy to watch. And some of the players that are coming in, again, that play differently. And I'd say something else as well. And Johnny Sexton seems to have played with a little bit more freedom. He seems to be playing with a smile on his face. A whole variety of different parts on it. He's not barking at the referee. You know, the World Cup is over and in the past now, but he was this time last year, he was as cranky as a bag of cats. And he just looks, there's a different reality coming for them. Now, it's interesting to see how that works. I still think Leo Cullen has done a remarkable job with Leinster. He doesn't get as much credit as he should do. A lot of the credit seems to go to Stuart Lancaster. But you have a guy who's dealing with every other type of pressure that's involved in running a team in Leo. And I think he does it really well. So I think he has done a very good job. I'm interested to see how Farrell's reign goes. Mm. You know, he likes detail too, but he also likes fun, and he also he's a different type of coach. So I want to see how that manifests itself. I want to see what squad he picks, which guys is he going to trust that didn't perform to the level that they would have liked to have in the World Cup, and which guys has he earmarked as being people he wants to be his warriors going forward. And I think that makes it for a very intriguing Six Nations.
It sure does. Listen, thanks so much. Have a great Christmas.
And you have a fantastic Christmas.
Good man, Keith Wood. See ya.
Bye.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.